The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
So what you're telling me is that the Cardinals don't have that clear, homegrown, standout star player that they're going to give the golden at bat to. All right, let's play that game. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and I'm joined this week by somebody who probably knows that introduction by heart now. Heck, he has his own introduction. It is, of course, the amazing, the talented, the drive time superstar at Camo X 1120 AM, Kevin Wheeler. Kevin, hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Have you woken up from your Thanksgiving nap?
Yeah, but you know, I don't know how to put this, but like I'm always kind of in that mode. So, you know, Thanksgiving doesn't really faze me.
Well,
it's just another day.
You're always in the eating that much and napping mode.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the way that I would put it is like, I don't always eat as much as you would think of a traditional Thanksgiving. But on Thanksgiving, I don't necessarily eat more than I normally do.
Okay. All right.
Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're rocking the Detroit Lions.
How about
t-shirt.
That? Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Impressive.
13 defensive players on injured reserve.
Okay.
And they're 11-1.
They're the Dodgers of the NFL.
I mean, it's way worse than that, because it would be like if the Dodgers didn't have Mookie Betts or Shohei Ohtani. I mean, like, the guys that they're missing, especially Hutchinson. I mean, he's probably one of the two or three biggest or best pass rushers in the league. He's been out since like week three or week four, and he's done for the year with a broken leg. So, yeah, they're doing all right, man. They got a good offense, which is what helps, right? When you can go put up 30 every week, I think you're in a position where you can make up for some defensive shortcomings.
And this has been your annual NFL Minute on the best podcast.
There we go, baseball. Yeah. That's all we need for a baseball podcast. One minute.
let's just get right to it. What are you looking for from the winter meeting? The winter meetings are coming up in Dallas. First time the winter meetings have been in Dallas, since 2011. Cardinals went to those meetings as the World Series champion. They go to these meetings in a very different spot than that team. What are you looking for? The big headlines, Juan Soto, anything else?
It starts with that, but that's because everything else is linked to that, right? I mean, you've got five of the biggest spenders, five teams looking to add significantly this offseason, all tied up on that right now. And every one of them, that guy is their top priority. So until that happens, and it sounds like it could happen even before they get to Dallas. Mm-hmm. Lots of reporting that it could be this weekend. If you're Juan Soto, what's the point of taking all this time? You know, they're all offering you the crazy money. It's just a matter of picking where you want to be and which one is the best overall situation for what your goals are. It shouldn't take 3 months, right? It's not like Blake Snell or Montgomery last year where teams just weren't bringing the offers that they were expecting. I mean, teams came right out of the gate here. Hey, buddy, here's $600 million. Here's $700 million. So it should be pretty easy for that to get done pretty quickly. And to me, once that happens, then we start to see where do all the other puzzle pieces fall? And that, to me, is what impacts the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if your ability to trade someone like Nolan Arenado probably has a lot to do with where Alex Bregman ends up going, right? And maybe where someone else doesn't spend $600 million on one particular player, and they can turn to a deal where they make two or three moves instead of one move. So I think a lot of that impacts the Cards, which is why I'm most interested in that. I'm also really interested in the pitching market, but not the top level. I think that's easy, right? I mean, Corbin Burns and Max Fried will get paid bigger than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. I think they're both going to be more than Blake Snell. But those guys are like separate, but the market that impacts the Cardinals is the one we've already started to see play out. I mean, when Luis Severino is getting 3 years and what, $23 million a year, $22.5 million a year, when he's getting that, doesn't someone like Eric Fetty have real tremendous trade value?
Yeah. Like, well, he did.
I mean,
going
he's
in,
at
yeah.
one. Right, right. So what I'm saying is the more that market goes up, I would think the more valuable a guy like Eric Fetty becomes. Mm-hmm. And maybe even the more valuable that a guy like Steven Matz becomes. The problem is it's not like Matz's value is going to move in a big chunk. It might move in an incremental way just because he's had a hard time staying on the field.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's – so you've kind of mapped it out well. I think there's so many different domino rallies, right? And so Soto's the biggest one, right? And where he goes, then all of a sudden, maybe if he signs with – another team other than the Yankees, maybe the Yankees are like, well, Bregman's our guy, right?
Right.
And all of a
right.
sudden, the Yankees are off the board for a third baseman. Well, say he signs with the Red Sox, and the Red Sox go, gosh, we got this guy. Now let's beef up the, you know, the starting thing, but we can't go after Max Fried anymore, you know. And then they go down the line. Well, now
right.
Fetty, or actually more likely, Matz becomes more appealing, right?
Right.
You know, and so you have a cost certainty move there. So you can see how, like, all these, like, headliner moves, they at least pull some string that guides the Cardinals' opportunity
yep.
as well. You know, the one that stands out that maybe doesn't is the Phillies. The Phillies have been involved in the in the Juan Soto discussion, you know, a little bit, right? And
yeah.
they've reportedly
yep.
been in there. They aren't always listed as like a top team, but they are interested in, or they are listed as an interested team. And their owner has talked about that. You know, you don't
yep.
pass on the opportunity to go out. If they bow out, then you're looking at a team that is also shopping for a third baseman. Have they been more invested in conversation with Scott Boras about Bregman than say Soto? And, you know, it's all kind of, until they
right.
start signing, it's all kind of related because you're talking to the same agent. And, you know, it's not unusual. Cardinals did it, right? I mean, the Cardinals, you know, spoke at length with Albert Pujols' agent, who also represented Carlos Beltran.
Right.
You know? And so
right.
Albert Pujols signs, and it's not too long after that that the Cardinals are able to pivot because they're able to keep those parallel conversations going, which is what all teams do. I think there is, Kevin, a little element of theater to this. You know, Major League Baseball would really like a winter meetings bonanza.
Yeah.
And
some and, excitement.
Know, and Scott Boras would too. You know, the whatever you know, Ken Rosenthal called it the Boras Revenge Tour or something along those lines. you know, I mean, he's done okay for himself. I don't think anybody, but you know, a showcase of you know, the guys that he has placed and press conferences at Dallas and all the, you know, the eyes of the industry there and gathered and ready to go. You know, baseball benefits from that and would really like obviously
for sure.
their brightest star, at least their brightest star to be featured there.
You would think, and you know, it's part of like, I know you can't schedule it, right? I mean, it's, but you'd love for it to happen naturally, right? Because
yeah.
last offseason kind of sucked. Last offseason was like, oh my God, like these guys are signing in spring training. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, and it's more of an educated guess than a flat out guess, but it sure seems like even though the local TV deals are going back a little bit, there's more certainty today than
Most
there was
definitely.
At this time last year, which is why
there's
I think
less,
you're seeing teams
yep.
make moves.
Yep. There's less money, but there's more certainty. I mean,
right.
that's just that there's no other way around it. And last year, a year ago, there was, I mean, even a month ago, I
yeah.
guess a little less than a month ago for the Cardinals, they didn't know they had to brace themselves for what would be a steep cut, which would
right.
be bouncing out of their Diamond Sports Group or having Diamond Sports Group not emerge from bankruptcy, have them liquefied or whatever, you know, was the result there. If they didn't have a plan, then all of a sudden they're with MLB and they're facing a steeper cut. One that is like, well, what revenues are you going to get? What advertising are you getting? They would have gotten, you know, they would have gotten money from that, but it's a more significant cut than the one they took from Diamond Sports. And we see that over and over again. The Royals, you know, going back to Diamond Sports, Cincinnati not coming to an agreement,
right,
and then having to bounce. Minnesota, another one that, like, they are talking about having to stall or reduce costs because they are in a spot where their TV revenue is not what they projected it to be. And you think back a year ago, they were in that nebulous unknown and they didn't know how to act. So yeah, now all 30 teams at least know where their games will be on TV next year.
Right.
They all know what that dollar figure is that they'll get. About half of them are not thrilled because it's a complete change and it comes 4 years after ticket sales vanished too. So there's a whole lot of like, all right, well, this is not the budget we expected for 2025.
Right.
There's a lot of adjustments there, but certainly knowing is half the battle, Kevin, to borrow from our childhood cartoons.
Yeah, you can't make a plan without a budget.
Right.
It's really hard to do that.
So even though they know it's less of a budget, it's still there. And I think that is leading to some of this action. I also think that like some of the teams that have deals in place and are still going to get similar revenues, like teams that own their own networks or made that shift, that they're standing out in this market. I mean, you look at the big players, right?
Yep.
You know, the Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers, they weren't hit by this Diamond Sports group. They were firewalled from it because they have their own setup.
Yep.
And I think it's really fascinating to see them act like it.
It is.
And they have such an edge
that
they're willing to play it.
And I of all the things that people want to have conversations about when it comes to the health of the sport moving forward, this is where the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, needs to get off his ass, stop talking about stupid ideas like the golden at bat, and start working to get those teams on board to help with the health of the rest of the league. They need more revenue sharing in this sport. They don't need a salary cap. Salary caps do not do what people think they do. They do not enhance parity. Look at the dynasties that you've seen in football and basketball. That's all you need to do. I mean, there is no such thing as parity through a salary cap. There's parity in football because they only play 18 games. And in 18 games, all it takes is three games in a year to go from a win to a loss or a loss to a win, and it dramatically changes the look of your season.
Mm-hmm.
And baseball is not going to happen. That's not going to happen. It's a marathon. It takes little bits and little bits over a long period of time. But revenue sharing needs to be done in a better way. Because I don't think we have a problem today. I know there are a lot of people panicking. Oh, my God, this Dodgers thing is ridiculous. Look, man, the Dodgers and Yankees have outspent the sport for 30 years.
Yeah.
And they you know, in the last 15 years, they have two World Series combined. In the last 20, they have three World Series combined. It does not. You cannot buy World Series. You can buy division titles, right? You can buy appearances in the postseason, even if you don't win your division. And that's a thing that's different. But, you know, everybody's worried about the appearance of dynasties. We haven't had a dynasty in baseball since the Yankees in the mid-90s to the early 2000s. That's all. We haven't had it in 25 years in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Even without a cap. The cap is not the problem. I mean, in that 25 years, how many dynasties have there been in the NBA? At least three.
I mean,
at least three, because you had the Spurs, you had the Golden State Warriors, you've had the LeBron dynasties in different places during that time.
So can you tell me what a dynasty, let's Lincoln Douglas this thing. What is your definition of a dynasty?
I would say it's consistent success over a 5 to 10 year period with multiple championships.
Okay, so like the Dodgers now qualify.
Maybe, yeah, I mean.
Because they have dominated that division.
They would be in the beginnings of becoming one.
Yeah.
The problem is the first championship is not, it's not less than, it's just not in a full season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it counts. It's not less than because you had to make the playoff run, but it was just a weird year and it's hard to know what it meant.
I would caution you to not wait for a dynasty to emerge before acting to head a dynasty off.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high-quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I don't think we should head off dynasties, though. I mean, like, dynasties have been a massive part of the history of the sport, and in every other sport, they're viewed as a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, when the Patriots are a 20-year dynasty, it's never, what is the NFL going to do to rein in the Patriots? Or to like, dynasties are what sports are built on, and tearing them down is part of the fun.
I want yes.
I mean, where would we be? Like, think of the history.
That was just
of sports.
That was just an incredible commentary on the human condition.
Yeah, I meant it more of like from the opposition than from the fans, but it works both ways, I guess.
But you totally nailed it. I think we're done. I think that was very strong.
I mean, the history of baseball is built on dynasties.
I don't even think you need to use the word baseball in that sentence.
No, that's a good point.
I think we just became a political science podcast. Wow.
Yeah,
I probably should say it more clearly. I don't have a problem with dynasties either. I think they're cool. I think they make for great storylines. I think they make for great coverage. I think they make everybody better because teams have to rise to find a way to compete with the best. I think dynasties are an outgrowth in sports. Dynasties are an outgrowth of a meritocracy. I like that. I like that a lot. What concerns me about the trend in Major League Baseball, and I've asked a few guests on the best podcast in baseball about this, is the consolidation of talent.
Mm-hmm.
That is new to baseball.
No, it's not. And we had the same conversation before the Subway Series.
We did not.
It was the exact same conversation when it was Mets and Yankees 25 years ago. It was, oh my God, the big markets are taking over. This is what the strike was supposed to
prevent. That's
not
what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about like the big markets taking over. I'm talking about players. You see most often in the NBA where I want to gravitate to this
team,
and I'm willing to take this.
We want to bring D Wade and LeBron and Bosh together.
And right? I'm willing to take Bosh as an example. I'm willing to take less than market value to play for this team.
Right.
I think it's great. I think that's really fascinating that players as free agents should choose where they want to go. In baseball, if that starts to happen, and we are seeing it happen, deferred money, though that's not like a ticket out of paying, nor is that a ticket away from a luxury tax.
It's an end around it a little bit.
A little bit, but I mean, Shohei.
I mean, Shohei Ohtani's deal only counts as like $45 million against the cap, and it's a $70 million a year thing. And
it's,
I understand, because
million,
of the, right, but I'm saying it's what 60% of what his AAV is.
Correct. Right. It's modern day value. It's AAV. That money still has to go in the bank within 2 to 3
years.
Yeah,
they have to pay as they go. Right. It's not.
Right. They
it's
have
not,
to pay as not, they yeah. go because, yeah. you know, that's just
part of the CBA.
It's part of the CBA, but
it's the security
also,
for the Players Association, because what they don't want is somewhere down the road an owner to be like, oh, I'm bankrupt. You don't get
right.
paid.
That's exactly right. It's right. Yeah. So all that money is still paid. It's still paid out, and teams choose when they do it. So some teams will defer that. You know, money is deferred with interest. Sometimes money's not deferred with interest. Nolan Arenado's money from the Cardinals is deferred interest free, but the money that the Rockies deferred from his contract is gathering interest. That was something that he agreed to make that trade possible. Okay. So, But I think, you know, like you mentioned the Subway Series, right? Subway Series, oh my gosh, New York is taking over and everything like that. But you look at those teams and, you know, you're not like with Roger Clemens, Mike Piazza and everything like that. But there were superstars elsewhere in the game. Ken Griffey Jr. was not on that stage.
Yeah.
You know, you think about like the best players going, they weren't all there.
Well, they're not all in LA now.
But what happens if
Paul Skeens is in Pittsburgh and Bobby Witt Jr. is in Kansas City and Jackson Chorio is in Milwaukee and Ronald Acuna is in Atlanta? I mean, like,
yeah, I mean, but what if the five biggest contracts, which are a sign of the best players,
mm-hmm.
or six biggest contracts are on two teams?
All right.
Yeah. I mean, don't have a problem with that.
Well, I mean, because there are 750 major league players at any given time. There's more than five or six elite players. And, you know, the guys that you could rank 7, 8, 9, 10 in any given year could be one or two. I mean, sure. A year ago, Ronald Acuña was number one or two. Sure. You know what I mean? So like,
and Austin Riley was in the top
Austin
10.
Riley. Yes, exactly. I mean, it's such an inexact science.
It is.
And this is where it's also unlike football and basketball. In football and in basketball, if you've got those players,
yeah,
you're winning. You're winning, and you're winning, you know, in the NBA, you're winning 70 out of 82 games.
Yeah.
You're winning 65, 68 out of 82 games. Because in that game, the ball is always in the hands of the stars. In football, if you have an elite quarterback, you're winning most of the time because the ball's always in his hand when you have the ball on offense. The hitter bats four times a game. The pitcher throws five innings and then he's replaced. I mean, like no individual player has the impact on a baseball game that you do in a football or a basketball game, which
Absolutely.
Is why this stuff doesn't. Now there is a part
of this. You're
making
my point for me. You're making my point. If you have a bunch of players starting to coagulate, gather on one team, now you're totally shifting that
But what's this going to look like in 5 years when all of these guys are in their late 30s and 40s still making $45, $50, $60, $70 million a year? What's it going to look like?
I mean, it's going to be really interesting, like what, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. feels about having to, you know, play alongside Mookie Betts when he's in his late 30s.
Yeah, but Bobby Witt Jr. just signed a 10-year deal or something. I mean, like, He'll be in his 30s then too.
No, I know. I just was making it. I was making.
Yeah,
a joke.
I think that's the kind of the question. That's why I really do think it's important to see where it goes, because how many of these teams that we thought were going to be super teams wind up falling apart because of a shoulder injury? Albert Pujols goes to the Angels and immediately the leg problems get worse and he's just no longer Albert Pujols.
Sure.
He's not even, you know, I mean, like that happens all the time.
Yeah, but I don't know if we've seen a team like the Dodgers before.
No. And that's why we have to assess it. By the way, I just want to be
very giving them credit. I'm giving them credit for this. I'm trying to think. Let me put it this way, okay? Entering this season, I really thought the Dodgers were vulnerable. You know, coming into this season, I was like, man, that pitching depth is going to catch up with them. You know, their health, they traded for Glasnow, and that's fine. They signed Yamamoto to a massive deal. But I was like, gosh, this is going to be the year that the Padres have a real chance because, you know, they trade for Dylan Cease. I just really thought that like the Dodgers pitching was going to catch up with them. Not to the same degree, but in a similar vein than we saw the Cardinals pitching catch up with them. And just, they were going to spend all year chasing innings and couldn't week to week to week to week be as consistent. Well, man, I was wrong. I just was wrong. They just papered over it over and over and over again. You know,
had some pretty quality young guys that provided innings.
They did, but they also could make a choice to waive a guy who no other team could waive. Like, no other team who was contending would do that, and they just move on.
I mean, but this is like, I mean, I'm trying to be serious. I'm not trying to be exaggerating anything here, but this is no different than the 90s Yankees. Every year they went out and signed the biggest free agent. They went out and signed Roger Clemens or David Cone or whoever they thought was the piece to keep them moving. Because, they developed their core, and the Dodgers have developed a core. A lot of the guys that they rely on are their own guys. But I guess that's why I'm saying we've seen this movie before.
Name some. The guys they rely on are their own guys. Go ahead. Will Smith.
Will Smith at the catching position.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they don't really rely on Gavin Lux.
No, they don't.
Kind of a guy. Well, they developed guys like Bobby Miller and Heath Phillips is one of their guys.
These are all really helpful.
Well, Yamamoto's their guy, but it's in a weird way.
$300 million their guy.
Yeah, it's a weird way. It's not fully player development. Yeah. Who else was I thinking of? Because I know Hart was not their guy.
Exactly. Exactly. Teoscar, yeah. Not their guy. Mookie Betts traded. Freddie Freeman signed.
Yeah.
Clayton Kershaw's their guy.
Yeah.
Totally I mean, their guy.
He barely pitched. So,
you know,
he wasn't really a factor this year.
Tommy Edmund, not their guy.
No.
Shohei Ohtani, not their guy. Max Muncy, not their guy.
Nope.
I don't see it. I'm not sure that there's much support for.
That's a good point. They did. I mean, they originally had that, but then they are all hurt this year.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, even I mean, like, but even then, like the prominent players are imports, are brought in from the outside.
Sure,
you know, I mean that now they had the farm system to do it, and they had the financial wherewithal to keep.
I mean, nobody in St. Louis was upset about that when it was Scott Rolen and Jim Edmonds.
Exactly,
and
no,
Chris
you're right.
Carpenter, and you know whoever else was brought in from the outside, and again, I think there's a problem here. I just think the problem is getting those biggest markets to share revenue more with the rest of the league. And the problem that happens here is that every time we have these questions and issues, it turns into a question. Well, we have a problem amongst owners. Let's make the players solve it. It's always about caps and floors. Mm-hmm. No, fix revenue sharing first. Mm-hmm. Get the guys that make $800 million a year in revenue. Mm-hmm. Get them to the table and say, guys, you need to be team players. Mm-hmm. You need to share more of your revenue because you have more than you can ever use. And we need to balance that out. And then if there's a problem after that, then come talk to the Players Association. But we sit here and we talk about salary caps like they fix things. They don't fix anything that we're talking about because the cap is going to be set at the top end of where things are right now, mm-hmm. which is where 20 teams can't go anyway.
Right.
And then you're going to tell me that we're going to set a floor where? If we set the floor at 150, that doesn't level the playing field. It doesn't change the ability to compete with the Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox, Phillies, Cubs if they ever choose to spend. It doesn't change any of that.
I mean, setting up a floor based on payroll is a recipe for unintended consequences.
Right. And you're going to see teams overpaying bad players because they have to get to a floor. They're not going to be in on the elite guys because
they're going to be, or you were talking about like, what does it look like 10 years from now?
Yeah.
What it looks like 10 years from now is a team can't reach the floor. So they trade for Mookie Betts.
Yeah. You want an example
because
they
want his salary to count against the cap.
You know, look for an example where this can go bad. Look at the NHL.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Everybody has to spend. Nobody has any cap space. You can't move players. There's no trade deadline activity of any note. Star players are staying with the teams that they're on, sure. But when you're stuck, you're stuck. And you're stuck for a long time.
And, some background on this. So the NHL lost a whole season to get a salary cap.
Yep.
One of the sticking points for said salary cap is salary caps are based on what slice of revenue they negotiate. They define revenue and then they haggle over the percentage at which then sets the cap.
And it's roughly 50-50. It's not exact, but it's
roughly. Sometimes it's 47-53, 48, and then it changes through the years. The biggest problem of that between the Major League Baseball Players Association and MLB will not be negotiating over the slice of the pie. The biggest problem will be defining revenue.
Right.
That will be the huge sticking point.
Yes.
Because Major League Baseball has been resistant to opening up all of its streams of revenue for the union to view. And they have siloed off entire areas of revenue so that, you know, they're not part of this discussion. Which brings us to one.
So, as an example for anybody that's not fully getting what we mean, we can use the Cardinals as an example. Under the current way things are done, something like Ballpark Village would not count as revenue for these purposes because it's not directly related to game revenue. It's viewed as a separate thing, but it exists because there are games 81 times a year, right?
Right.
Like it's fueled by that.
For some teams, it's parking.
It could be that. It could be a lot of different things. And a lot of it can be too, like when you look at the Yankees and the Red Sox and those teams, and they're looking at their local TV deals. Well, they own the networks, so they set the price that they pay themselves.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that, because some of this is also the tech, like MLB Network and the MLB app and all that stuff. You know, it was very public how much Disney bought some of the tech from them. And if you are old enough to remember HBO Go, that was built upon MLB production, or an MLB product that they
MLB ran that. They ran the golf streaming and PGA streaming services.
They had the
WWE.
Yep, they had the tech. And so that was something owners all invested in early in MLB BAM, Major League Baseball Advanced Media. And so they benefited from the advancements that they made. So kudos to them for being inventive and being ahead of the curve. No pun intended. It's interesting, because one area where they might find, it brings us to the fact that one area where they might find a solution to what you're talking about is broadcast rights.
Yeah. Yeah.
The commissioner wants an NBA style national package.
Yep.
Where everybody has access to everything. To make that happen, to enter into a deal where Amazon or Netflix or Paramount Plus or whatever streaming entity can buy all the games and then sell a subscription to all the games, blackout free and everything like that, you have to have all 30 teams on board.
That's right.
Amazon has with some of the offers that were made and some that didn't happen, some that did, right? Has done it in parts, in pieces. You might have access to, like, the Cardinals are going to be available, right? Via Amazon Prime, I believe it is. But not all 30 teams are going to be available. And some of that is because, like, you have the Red Sox, you have the Dodgers, you have the Cubs, who are perfectly fine staying on their own platform and taking all that money. If the commissioner can pull them all together into a larger collective to then package and sell and find a buyer for that, some teams would benefit greatly beyond what they're currently getting.
Yeah.
Some teams might not benefit as much. That deal,
some might lose a little bit.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They might lose, but
those are the big boys.
Those are the big boys. And in a way, that's forced revenue sharing, is it not?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about.
So that might be the solution.
Because what makes the NFL work is that Green Bay has the revenue to get to the salary cap.
Right.
Right? I mean, a cap is meaningless. A floor is meaningless when you have 10, 15 teams that can't match the revenue. Hell, there's 20 teams that can't match the revenue of, well, maybe not. Maybe this is the better way to put it. There are probably 23 or 24 teams that cannot match the revenue of the top five or six. Cannot. Yeah.
So
it cannot even come close.
It's long been described to me like, okay, there was a time when the Cardinals were top 10 toward the back end of the top 10 in payroll, and they tried to line it up with revenue, right? Okay. All of this kind of shifted a little.
Right, right.
But the way it was described to me by a Major League Baseball official, as I kind of looked through and could reverse engineer where the Atlanta Braves were, because they're publicly traded, right?
Yes.
You could kind of use them. You used to be able to. It's harder now because the Braves have their own. They have great ticket sales. They have a great TV.
They have their own version of Ballpark Village. Yep.
Right. All that stuff makes it a little bit less comparable, because the Cardinals used to make up in ticket sales, all that stuff. But the way it was described to me was that there's a continental shelf, right? There is the top three, and the difference between three and, or say four and five, is also the difference between five and 13.
Oh yeah.
Like, for sure. Yeah. Like, it's a huge drop off.
Yes.
And so, how to whittle that down while also being respectful of cost of doing business. Like building a ballpark, running a ballpark, salaries for people at the ballpark are different.
Yeah.
Now, city to city.
Yeah.
So if you're like, all right, New York, operate on the same budget as Milwaukee.
No,
that doesn't work. It doesn't happen. And I think the NFL is a bit of a flawed example, because the NFL, and this may have changed, but there was a time, but I don't think it has, Kevin. There's a time where the NFL doesn't have to sell a ticket and it's profitable. Because
it exists right now.
Because
of its
TV deal,
The national TV deal is so big, every team is in the black before a ticket is sold. That is still correct.
Right. And so all the tickets are just lanyard. They're just bonus.
But they also share that revenue too, though.
No, I know, but baseball will never get there.
No, no. And again, this is why, I mean, I think it's important to understand we're not going to get to the level that you have in football where everyone is pretty close to the same on revenue. There are some things that, like, the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants and those big teams in big markets have in terms of revenue streams locally that doesn't count toward what needs to be shared, but most everything gets shared. And that's because the rules were made a long time ago. And now, just like you're not going to get the players to agree to a cap, you're not going to get these top five or six owners to say, yes, we will take less money in our pockets. And yes, we will give away part of the competitive advantage that we have right now.
Yeah.
That's the big part. But that's got to be the job of the commissioner with the support of the rest of the owners. They have to be able to do that. Otherwise, these worries become greater down the road.
Well, and that's where I was getting at, where you want to head off the dynasty.
Yes.
The dynasty isn't the word. You want to head off the behemoth. You want to head off the coastal drift of the game.
Well, the problem that I run into is the focus of the conversation is the wrong focus. The one we're having is the one that needs to be had. We need to stop talking about salary caps. We need to stop making this an owners versus players labor issue. That is not what it is. This is owners and owners. This is owners of the top handful of markets needing to be team players.
Yeah. Yeah.
They need to be team players, because otherwise nothing changes.
I hear all this, and all that goes through my mind as well. The owners, one way that they'll fill their coffers is expansion. So at least we know that's on the horizon.
Hey, look, I'm down with it. I think that's a great way to get a big cash infusion. And if that can be a motivator to say, okay, you're going to make a little less, but hey, here's a big check for your troubles.
Right. That's where it is. Yeah. All right. Well, where do the Cardinals fit into all this? I mean, they are as central and as middle as you can get.
Yeah.
They are likely dipping down towards the middle of payroll, Spence. They certainly are in the middle of farm system rankings. It's really hard to get more middle than the Cardinals at this point.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a muddle for them. Where do they fit into all this, Kevin? I mean, how do they find their place in this, in really developing new world order the Major League Baseball is going?
They have to become the Atlanta Braves.
Okay.
I mean, and by that, I mean, you have to develop your stars. Not to say you can't add them from outside. You can.
I mean, the Braves did. I mean,
they added Matt Olson. Right, right.
Yeah, they were like, thank you.
Ronald Acuna and Austin Riley and Spencer Strider and Max Fried. I mean, like, you know, unlike the Dodgers, the vast majority of what the Atlanta Braves have done have been their scouting successes.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about guys that have been taken number one overall. This ain't Skeens. This isn't Bryce Harper. These are legitimate, good scouting and development finds. Obviously there are a lot of teams to pull from, right? You can pull from some of the things the Dodgers do. You can pull from some of the things that the Rays do that Chaim Bloom was a part of back in the day. There are a lot of things you can pull from, but you've mentioned this a million times, and you're the one that woke me up to it when you were saying when you were looking at the Braves as a publicly traded team, and you're like, well, the Braves and Cardinals are not that far off in terms of the overall profile of the franchise. So revenues are probably similar, not the same, but similar. Although Braves are growing, so they used to be a lot similar,
but now it's changing a little bit.
But it's still a loose comparable, right? Maybe you can't go 100% of what the Braves spend, but you can go 90%.
I mean, they're closer to Atlanta because of their ticket sales,
than
they are to the Brewers. But now, if ticket sales crater, and they have a hard time selling those, then they're even further.
And again, I think you can take the pattern after Milwaukee too, right? I mean, you know, they developed all their own pitchers. They developed Corbin Burns and Freddy Peralta and Brandon Woodruff, and they drafted and developed Devin Williams, and they did the same thing with Jackson Chourio. Now, they added Willy Adames from the outside. They've added from the outside. It's not like they don't, but those are the models, right? And right. There's no reason why you can't do that. And I know that that's going to be the interesting part of what they're doing here is they could be in a really nice sweet spot. They don't have to go out and buy all their stars like the Dodgers are doing. Right. They don't have to go out and buy all these big players. And now the Yankees have some of their own, but they've also bought quite a bit too. Aaron Judge is their own. They get a lot of credit for that. A lot of teams passed on Aaron Judge in the first round because tall guys don't hit very well generally.
Yeah.
And the Yankees made it work, and they figured out how Aaron Judge could be an impact player, and he is that.
And Aaron Judge made it work too. I mean,
well, no, for sure. Yeah. But I mean, like, look, 26 teams passed on that guy.
Yeah.
Because he's 6'7". If he was 6'5", somebody would have taken him before that, which is the dumbest thing in the world.
He also didn't hit for a whole lot of power in college.
No, but he hit the ball hard. He just didn't hit in the air.
He didn't hit in the air. Boy, that sounds familiar.
I know, doesn't it? That's why when we – and you've brought it up. I mean, you and I have talked about it. That's essentially what you're talking about with Jordan Walker.
Yeah, he just is in the majors instead of in college.
Right, except he's at the same age that Judge was when Judge was still in college.
Yeah, and using an aluminum bat and hitting the ball on the ground.
Yeah, and that's why you have to be patient with a guy like Walker and with a guy like Gorman, who has a different set of problems. He hits the ball in the air. He just doesn't hit it often enough.
His swing is such that it's just leaving a whole lot of air in the strike zone for them.
Yeah, I'm less worried about his swing and more worried about his swing decisions. I
talked to scouts, man, and they're
there's a hole, but
yeah.
You know, it doesn't help when you're swinging at, you know, changeups off the plate and trying to pull them off the plate away and you're trying to
totally
pull
agree.
Them.
I think these are related.
They totally are. Yeah. Yeah. But they're also fixable.
I think he's making decisions because he knows, well, I'm going to be out on the pitches here. I got to do something with the pitches there.
Yeah. Like, it's a combination because you're right. There's absolutely a hole in his swing. He can't hit anything above the belt.
Right.
I mean, any velocity above his belly button, he's in big trouble.
His swing plane doesn't get it.
You know? No. But then the other side of it is, you know, I think he also cheats for power too much when he doesn't need to.
These are related.
Yeah. He could easily with his strength and bat speed, easily hit five to seven home runs a year to left center.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to pull everything. You know, there are guys that have to pull the ball to hit it out. Right. I mean, you know, Nolan Arenado's kind of in that boat right now. Alex Bregman is that kind of guy. I get it.
Yeah, Alex Bregman.
But like at this point, if Arenado doesn't pull it, it's probably not going out.
No, I'm just saying that. But that's been his whole career. Like, he's
a
pull for power guy. Like, you know, when he made his debut a year ago, he had the most pull side home runs of anybody in baseball.
Right. But he would also hit the ball, not for power, not for home runs, but for singles and doubles up the middle to right center field.
Yeah, we saw more of that this year to just kind of supplement, to kind of sweeten his average a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, he's a pull for power guy, whereas Goldschmidt was the opposite, right?
Yeah.
His power was opposite field. You know, he gave himself that much more time because of his strength to drive a pitch. So Cardinals to get back.
This kind of gets back to the original question, right?
Yeah.
You got to figure out how to get Jordan Walker to be your Austin Riley, not positionally, but productive, you know, in terms of production. You got to figure out how you make Nolan Gorman an everyday player, even with his weaknesses.
This is so fascinating. Okay, so let's do this. All right, so you got to have Mason Winn become your Ozzie Albies.
Sure.
At a more prominent position.
Better defender, but yeah.
Better. Well, wait, what?
Mason Winn's a better defender.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Gotcha. At a more premium position. I think Ozzie Albies is a pretty good second baseman.
He is, but he can't play shortstop, so he's not a better defender.
Right, gotcha. Yeah, at a premium position, an elite fielder who provides more offensively, and Ozzie Albies and Mason Winn. If Mason Winn hits like Ozzie Albies, that's pretty good.
Albies
might hit for a little more power.
Albies has more home run power now.
Does he?
Now, like production, he hits 25 home runs. We haven't seen that yet from Wynn. I think Wynn is stronger than Ozzie Albies. He's a bigger guy. I think he's probably a little bit better overall athlete. I mean, let's put it this way. And I saw this, I forget who did this. So I feel like an idiot. But there, it wasn't Driveline, but it's something along those lines. It was an instructor at one of those places who was talking about if you can throw 100, you can hit the ball 115 miles an hour because you can rotate. If you can rotate, it works for throwing and hitting. So my point on Mason Wynn is, if he can rotate his body and move his body in a way that he can throw 100 miles an hour,
the hip
then he can hit he can hit for power.
Yeah, it's the coil, you know, you have it biometric where like
there's a lot of similarities in that part.
Yep. Snap forward, yeah. You know, the torso catapult or however you want to describe it.
However you want to describe it, the fact is those two actions are related.
Okay.
They're not exactly the same, but they're related.
So at one point in time, Austin Riley was going to be a left fielder. He does fine at third base, but he was going to be a left fielder. You know, that was one possibility there. So Jordan Walker, Austin Riley, Mason Wynn, Ozzie Albies, Victor Scott II, Michael Harris.
He's not going to hit for that power though.
He's not going to hit for that power. No, but he can play position.
But your position is, you know, like Harris is a good defender, and I think Scott can be that if they can just smooth out the jumps and routes and stuff.
Ivan Herrera becomes your Murphy.
I mean, well, maybe.
Or Pedro Páez is your Murphy. I don't think either of them.
I think, let's just put it this way. Your catching tandem can be their catching tandem.
Okay. All right.
If not today, Murphy's.
Yeah, they had a weird catching tandem. You're right.
Yeah, and Murphy also did not have a great second half last year.
He did not have a great season.
No, but he's better than that, in my opinion.
He is. He should be. Wilson Contreras is your Matt Olson. I could see that.
Sure. Why not?
Different. I mean, obviously, right, left. Different.
Yeah. There. A little bit different profile, but yes, in terms of production, if you can have 145 games of Contreras, I would bet you the numbers are not far off of Olson's.
Maybe even
favoring Contreras in a couple ways.
Maybe.
I think Olson went out harder than Olson does.
He does. Olson went out there at that ballpark and hit 40 bombs. That's not going to happen at Busch Stadium.
No.
But pretty comparable. Okay, so. That's an interesting way to go about it. And then you got you don't have a Spencer Strider.
No.
But Quinn Matthews could be your Max Reed.
Yeah, could be. He's got the same kind of profile of repertoire, right? I mean, they're not overpowering, but they're quality lefties that can get some swing and miss at times.
Yeah, I have to think about that a little bit.
I mean, the pitches aren't the same, but I mean, it's a similar profile of where they slot in as pitchers. Because Freed is not a one. He's not an ace. He's not a Skeens. He's not a Glasnow type style guy. He's not that, but he's a legit two.
He is. It's interesting because like Quinn Matthews, you watch him pitch and he probably looks more like Sale at a lower.
Sure.
Than Freed does, but the results are more Freed than.
Yeah, he's not the kind of guy. Sale. He's not a 250 strikeout guy.
No, he's not. No,
he doesn't.
Well, he was a 200 strike. He does not. But he was a 200 strikeout guy in the minors, which should not be overlooked.
No, but a lot of that has to do with the level. And again, this is not picking on him. I really think
you're right.
A lot, but a lot of that happened against guys that were a little bit younger than a college guy out of Stanford, who was already polished with command. And you know, I'll be curious to see if more experienced hitters swing and miss as often at those same pitches.
Yeah, as we kind of go through this exercise, you do see how far the Cardinals have to go.
I mean, where's your Acuna?
Yeah.
Like Strider and Acuna. Like, and by the way, that when we're talking about player development and redoing how they're, you know, training and players and all that, you've got to find and develop those kinds of guys. The Cardinals, I got to be honest with you, like there's something the Cardinals do extremely well, maybe better than most teams in baseball. They are really good at just finding solid players.
Yep.
There are always players showing up that the Cardinals drafted and developed that are good, solid major league players.
Yeah, that's part of why.
Yeah, every couple of years.
Part of why they go elsewhere and have success.
Right. And then, but then the question becomes, a lot of it is, okay, who you keeping, who you're not keeping. But then there's also, but who's the last offensive star caliber player that you developed?
Matt Carpenter.
All right. That's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. He might retire. I mean, it's a long time ago. Wasn't he a rookie in 2011?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking 13 years?
Well, am I off on that? I mean, you could push back.
No, I guess the next guy that might fit, and I don't think he totally does if you look at his numbers this year, but is it a Rosarena? I wouldn't call him a star. He was a postseason star, but it's not like he's up there, you know.
Oh, so you would count guys going elsewhere?
I'm just, well, there are two separate conversations, right? There's one, who are the guys you drafted or signed as amateur international free agents and developed that became stars, period? Mm-hmm. And then second category is, how about the ones you kept? Because I don't know that I would call Adolis Garcia a star. He's a good player, and he had a great playoff run. And I think the problem with both Rosarena and Garcia from a perception standpoint is because what they did was on the national stage in the playoffs when they were at their peak, when they were hot, 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 everybody sees it. But when you look at their regular season numbers, they're good. They're good players. High-quality players, by the way, better than some of the guys you capped. In fact, maybe better than all of the guys you chose over them. So, again, different type of criticism. But they're not stars. Randy Rosarena is not profiling as an annual all-star, a regular all-star. Mm. He's going to profile at this point, based on what we've seen the last couple years, as an occasional all-star. It's still an all-star, though, right? But even if it's him, it's a lot of years ago.
Yeah.
And but he's not to me. I look at his numbers. I don't look at that and say that's a star player. I say that's a really good everyday player who can bat near the top of most lineups, but he's not in the category of the guys we're talking about with the Braves. I mean, you know, if you look at this 2024 season, he's 9% above average, league average. He hit .219.
Yeah.
He's fine. He's a good major league player. But his best year was 2021, best regular season, and that was an .815 OPS, which is fine again, but that's not star.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a star. That's a good player, but it's not a star. So if we're talking, and I don't know that I would even have called Matt Carpenter a star. He was an all-star, and I think he's got a better case at it than Randy Rosarena does.
I mean, but you're talking about like one of the best, most productive leadoff hitters for a good
stretch. And again, I'll concede that one. But
is Charlie Blackmon a star?
No.
Oh, all right.
No, he's not.
I mean, I don't know.
And there, no, but look, there was
he seemed like a pretty good Rocky.
He's a good player. He's a good but again, a star is the guy that can go out in free agency and get $30 million.
Oh my gosh, those guys used to be rare.
No, I'm talking about in the time frame that we are now.
No, I know.
But I'm I would say this. I would count Matt Carpenter in this more than I would count a Rosarena or Garcia.
I would say and
the problem is with Matt Carpenter, he debuted in 2011. You know, like that's a long time without developing a star that you kept.
It's a long time to go without a World Series title in this town.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It was 14 years between 1967 and 1982, 15 years.
So when I bring it up as those guys are few and far between, you say it's about today's numbers. But then when I bring up that it's a long time since a World Series, you go, well, let's go back to the
60s. Well, we just always forget these things, right? And then how long was it from the 80s until 2011?
That's math. It's not going to change.
No. But this is my point. Like perspective on this.
I mean, you can ask me today, and you can ask me 20 years from now, and the difference between the 80s and the 2000s is not going to change.
No, I know, but that's kind of my point. Is like, yes, 2011 to 2024, going into 2025, is a long time without a championship.
Yes,
but it's pretty much the norm for the history of this franchise. This franchise has 11 championships. In over 100 years.
You're typically people are going to love your perspective, 11. Man. They're
I'm not saying this. Hey, look, you can not like it. It's reality. It's the reality. You're over 100 years. You have 11 World Series. You're going to win one basically every 10 to 11, 12 years.
So how?
So we're past that, which is why I think the team is doing what they're doing. We're past that point where it's like, oh, okay. We're fine. You're not fine anymore. Because not only have you not won since then, Derek, we can look at it right now. There's no clear path to being that at the moment.
Well, that's what I'm getting toward. Yeah, that's
which is why it's a problem, because there's no clear. It's not like 2004, where it's been since 1982. But yeah, you're close. I mean, you got the MV3. You were in 100 games. Like, it's not that, right? Because at that time, you're probably not too panicked. You're probably looking at it going, okay, it's been 20 years, but we're really close right now. We got this Albert Pujols guy, and Molina's coming along, and all this other great talent, and Tony and Dunk. You're not there right now.
Yeah. So what you're telling me is that the Cardinals don't have that clear, homegrown, standout star player that they're going to give the golden at bat to.
All right, let's play that game. I mean, your golden at bat guy for the team right now is probably Contreras. Right?
Yeah.
And Contreras is a really damn good player, man. But, you know, I know that the hope is that Mason Wynn becomes the perennial all-star, you know, face of the franchise kind of guy. He's got the physical ability to do it.
I think obviously. They want Jordan Walker to be that guy.
Well, no, I mean, again, I understand, but Jordan Walker hasn't shown any signs of being an all-star.
That's not what? Like, how do you, I don't, okay, where are we at in the scale? Like I'm trying to, he hasn't shown any signs. So you're talking about production, not skill set.
Okay. And consistency of performance.
I just want to. I mean,
Mason Wynn just went out and had as a rookie and had 6 months where he's basically a consistent player.
And a gold glove deserving fielder.
No, this is my point. Mason Wynn is a lot further along in becoming that kind of guy than Jordan Walker.
I get it. But
Jordan Walker hasn't been able to stay in the big leagues.
You're right. But when you make a statement that he's shown no signs, I just want to know what those signs are. You're talking about production.
I'm talking about he has the physical traits. Yes. He has the physical traits. He's got the bat speed. He's got the strength. I think he could be a decent outfielder. For a big dude, he can run. He's got a cannon for an arm. The physical tools are there for him to be an all-star.
Yeah.
But we've only seen about 30 games where he's at the level you would like him to be. I mean, like for a stretch. Not total games, but like a stretch of maybe 30, 35, 40 games where Jordan Walker, you saw what you need to see in terms of
second
producing.
Half,
and I would put that basically August and September of 23.
Yeah. And I think
September of 23, you saw that. Now, you know what? You did a little bit in June of that year too. Again, there are little bits and pieces here where you've seen some of that.
Yeah,
but at that time, it was also coming with terrible defense. But that's more the team's fault than the player's fault, in my opinion. I think I brought it up before, but it was a waste to ever let him play third base in the minor leagues. He should have been playing the outfield from day one after he was drafted, because all he really lacks are the instincts of repetition. And he's getting there, but he's had to do that, you know, at the major league level and at the AAA level. And that's not easy to do in that environment when you're trying to survive as a hitter also.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, we talk about that second half of 2023, right? Or those final few months. And in the second half, he had more consistent play, obviously, because he returned, right?
Yes.
But he had lower OPS, lower slug, lower on-base percentage, and lower average, and was actually closer to the league norm. Now,
that was all July, though.
It was
like August and September was much better.
I was just gonna say, that all comes from about 100 plate appearances in July.
Yeah.
When he had a 209 average and
right, but in August, September, the OBP was like 350.
Correct.
You know, the OPS was 820, 830, something like that. So
it was. Yeah. And so I actually that was 51 games.
Right.
August and September. That's pretty good size to go, okay, that's the beginning, right? Like, is that like his ceiling? Like, you go there, 830 OPS, man, that they want more from that. That's a pretty good beginning for him to show. This last year, obviously, a real odd blip for him, Gorman, and a whole lot of players who just didn't then take that next step. And that's a reckoning for the Cardinals, right? Like, why did their talent regress? It goes back
to a question I've asked multiple times on this podcast. I've asked in press conferences. I've asked of the manager. I've asked of coaches. Is it's not about the guys who left. Get over the guys who left. It's about why they can't amplify the talent they kept. Amplification.
Yeah.
Where's the amplification?
Yeah. Why do we have to get to the point?
Right.
Yeah. Why do we have to get to the point where Nolan Gorman's in his third major league season and he has to get sent down? Like,
yeah, exactly.
That guy, I mean, he hit 27 home runs in 119 games in 2023. Why is he having to go down the next year?
Right. Exactly.
Some of that's on the player. Like, all of these things are a shared responsibility, but some of that's on the team.
Right.
You've got to find a way to somehow help get a guy back on track.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And for pitchers too. I mean, I would make the argument they're not doing that for guys on the mound either. I mean, there's no reason. There's no reason why you just sit back and let Miles Michaelis pitch the way that he does.
Right.
I mean, it's not.
That makes sense.
I know what worked 4 years ago, but if it's not working for two straight years, stop doing the same thing. If your whole thing is fill up the strike zone, but you're getting your brains beaten in, maybe you got to change.
You have to have support to do that.
This is right. So again, some of it's on the player, but it's also on the team. The team's got to be able to go, Miles, this isn't working. We got to stop doing this, and we're going to do this instead, which is what happens in Milwaukee and Tampa and the Dodgers and other teams.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll see if the Cardinals can do it. That's going to be a real thing. You know, for the first time, I mentioned Dallas, right? Dallas, they go off to Dallas in 2011 to the winter meetings, and the Cardinals were the belle of the ball. You know, they were the front office that teams wanted to hire from. And in the past few weeks, the Cardinals have hired from the Dodgers. They've hired from the Mariners. They've hired a couple folks from the Guardians.
Yep.
They are saying other teams are doing this better. We need to borrow from them. They've obviously got Chaim Bloom set in a leadership position, which brings us to this closing question. Are the most significant free agents that the Cardinals can sign this winter, are they in development?
Yes.
Or do you see some players out there that could expedite this quote-unquote reset, aid this reset, or just be like a little savvy move to get through this reset?
As it stands today, they still are not finished with building the infrastructure where they can take a guy and say, come on in, we'll make you better.
Correct.
So I'm not sure that – this is what Cleveland does. This is what Tampa does. This is what Detroit does. Detroit goes out and gets Jack Flaherty and says, here's how we can help you be better. They go out and get Michael Lorenzen. They say, hey, here's how we can help you be better. We're going to do this and make you better.
Matthew Boyd. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Right. Same idea. Now, it doesn't mean that the Cardinals can't do that. I don't know that they have finished that project yet.
They haven't, but the Cardinals feel they're in a better spot at the major league level to do that with somebody coming in. They feel that way.
But if I'm a free agent, sell me on it, why I would believe you're going to do that. You're right. Not doing it for your own guys.
Well, but the Cardinals feel like they have, my colleague Lynn Worthy wrote about that today a little bit, is this notion of proof of concept, right? Like some of the things that they did, you look at Palante, you look at McGreevy, you look at Matthew Libertor, you look at Alec Burleson. Some of the things that they did, they feel at the major league level, they have it set up to replicate, and they feel like they have the structure there, the tools there, the staff there, the tech there to make that happen. But they're not complete, no, but they feel they're in a better spot. I heard that a lot towards the second half. That might also be like, wish casting a little bit.
Maybe.
I mean,
but some of it happened, right? I mean, some of it happened, but
it did work with Palante.
Yeah, but how much was that was that on the team, and how much was that him?
It's got to be both.
No, but who initiated?
I think it was
both. I think it was the player.
You mean though, I need a schedule?
Like I got it. Well, I need to figure out how I can stay here.
Yeah, but you know what though? They went to him and said, "You can't stay here unless you do these things. Here's what you need to do these things." And he said, "Well, to do those things, I need to get innings.
You got
to
pitch. Yeah, you got to pitch as a starter."
I think it's more of a collective. In fact, like the conversations over the phone, not in person,
But the way each of them described the conversation, all parties involved,
yeah.
they are all definitely like they describe different pieces that they all brought to it. You know,
okay,
you're not doing this to get right-handed batters out. No kidding. I can see that. I live that. I can feel it. I watch it on the field.
Right.
I read the box scores and everything. Okay, here's a way you can get this pitch to do this thing or this new pitch to do this to play off of it. Okay, I can do that. I need innings to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to do this, then you can be a starter. Okay, well, let's go get me on a schedule so I can work. Like, you know, Andre talked a lot about how he had to create some pitch characteristics that he needed a bullpen session to do.
Right. And you can't do that as a
out of the bullpen. Right.
Right.
And so I think it was more collective and it was definitely advanced. You know, they, you know, some of what McGreevy was doing, right. You know, like there was concern about McGreevy coming up to the majors, you know, contact guy, what was he going to do? Was he going to get hit around a lot? You know, but what he had access to, and sort of a thought about his approach and what more he could do was available there in the majors. And it made him competitive.
Yeah. I do think this, so this is one, I want to give the Cardinals credit for one particular thing in this regard. I'm glad that they seem to be at the head of the curve or out in front of this idea that you're going to train pitchers to pitch deep into games. I think that is an incredibly important thing.
We'll see how that develops.
But in the big leagues, mm-hmm. if you find out that okay, third time through, this guy's not good, or in this particular game, it's close, it's a big game, we're gonna make the move earlier. But having the ability to do it, cannot happen unless you train to do it. You cannot train to pitch in the seventh inning by coming out of after the fifth inning of every game you pitch in the minors. You can't do it. But if in the minors you're doing it, you can then play each game in the majors based on what that game is telling you or on what you need, right? So let's say you blew out your bullpen the day before. Well, all right, maybe the guy's going to go seven today, even if it's not ideal, because we know he can. We trained him to do it. Mm-hmm. I think that is such an incredibly important thing, and you don't have to do it. You don't have to say you're going six or seven, but you can't do it when you're throwing four or five innings every time you pitch in the minors.
No, I think you make a great point. I also am amazed at the length you've gone to avoid answering my question.
Which question was that? We got on a tangent. I took us off path.
You said that the best free agents that they can get for them are in the development.
So okay.
Which is all that stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a free agent player who will help them accelerate this reset, help them come out of this reset, or just help them get by that appeals to you? Is there a free agent out there that would just be either get this guy now, keep him, have him be part of this rebound,
yeah.
or get this guy now, have him just help us get through this rebound, all that stuff. What's a free agent who you think is a fit for the Cardinals in their current situation?
All right, I'll give an example of a guy, but I have more of a category that I'm really thinking of.
Okay.
Because I don't know if this guy wants to be a part of what we're going to talk about. He seems to prefer to want to be on a contender. But
this sounds like a parent teacher conference.
But a guy like Hoffman out of Philly,
yeah,
I would want to sign him and make him a starter. I'm going to try to make the next Seth Lugo. I'm going to try to make the next Seth Lugo. Where you're talking about a guy who pitches as a reliever, but has three major league pitches. He has three legit pitches. He throws an upper 90s fastball.
Huh.
He throws a hybrid cut slider in the low 90s, and he throws a split in the low 90s. He's got three legit major league pitches. If I'm looking to take advantage, if I can find – now, the problem is, again, I don't know that player – is going to want a situation where the team is not definitely a contender because Jeff Hoffman is on a spot now where he might even be a closer for somebody that's a contender. Like, he's been a really high end reliever the last couple of years, but his history is as a starter. But when he was starting, he didn't have the cut. He didn't have that cut slider hybrid. Now he's got the third pitch and they're all plus stuff. They're all elite pitches. They all come out hard. They come out doing different things, but they come out of the same arm spot, a slot with the same arm speed. He doesn't have to change anything but the grip, basically. And, you know, when you look at his stuff, why doesn't that profile as a Seth Lugo type? Why wouldn't that be somebody that you can say, you know what? Here, we're going to give you a 3-year deal and we're going to pay you $12 million a year or whatever. And we're going to give you a chance to start. And we're going to, and see, because then to me, then I turn around and I move Eric Fetty or I move Steven Matz for nothing just to get rid of the contract. And I'll make the room payroll wise if I have to. But to me, that's a great kind of opportunity. Now, again, for him, maybe it doesn't work, but there might be a couple of other guys out there that are similar.
Yeah. No.
Where you can look at something's changed. Like they used to be starters, they had success in the pen, but it's because they figured something out. And then see if that player has an interest in, hey, you're a starter every fifth day. If it goes badly, we'll put you back in the pen and maybe you close for us after we trade Helsley. You know, like you don't know where that could go. But at the very least, if it doesn't work for that guy as a starter, you know you have a guy that is a legitimate back end of the pen on a contender. You know you have an, at the very least, you have an, now maybe $12 million is too little. Maybe you got to pay him $15 a year to get him to do it, because he's probably not getting that as a reliever, because he's not a closer. He's not one of those, you know, he's not that guy. But if it's not him, just that would be more of the area. That's the kind of guy I'd be looking at.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not an area I expect you. I mean, it would be a hard sales pitch. Like,
come
grow with us.
Cause Philly wants him back. He's going to have other contenders that are like, I mean, again, he might get offered a closer's job.
And he's
like,
32.
Right.
Seth Lugo got
back onto the starting too, was in his early 30s. And look at Lugo. I mean, he's a Cy Young finalist.
Yeah. Yeah. On another team.
Yeah. And again, so Hoffman might not be the right name because of all these things, but to me, it's that idea. Find a project.
You want to know who that might be?
Who's that?
Steven Matz.
Maybe, but I mean, you've had 3 years to figure that out.
No, I know, but he hasn't been healthy. But I'm just saying, like, the answer might not be that the Cardinals signed that guy. The Cardinals might trade that guy for the younger option.
Yeah.
Like, for somebody who you get that for. I think that's interesting. I actually kind of expect you to go with, like, a Kirby Yates or somebody along those lines that you.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean,
you get, but short term.
Yeah.
You get them now. You say, hey, man, there's going to be saves for you to have.
You got to trade Helsley to make that make sense for Yates, though.
Or you go out and do what Kittredge did, you know, and get all those holds. They need somebody like that.
No, yeah, I wouldn't mind that. I mean, if you want to go get another righty to replace Kittredge, that'd be fine.
And then flip at the trade deadline and try
to. But I think Yates will get closer offers from contenders.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he was 38. Maybe he will. We'll see how that goes. You know, we always think that, and then all of a sudden the spots run out.
But that kind of guy to take the Kittredge job would be great.
And then trade him at the deadline.
Yeah, or not.
I mean, maybe, I also think, like,
maybe you trade Helsley and that guy closes for you. Who knows?
Kyle Gibson would be kind of compelling, you know, same kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean,
cover the innings
at this point,
one way to stall development is to ask young guys to do more innings.
At this point, I want to shoot for stuff.
Sure. But you still,
I'm less about certainty and more about upside at this point.
I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I caution against running away from having some kind of ballast for innings. If you're asking your young guys to cover a lot of these innings, you know, that's going to catch up and maybe detrimental. You know, those games aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
You have to get 27 outs a day some way.
But in theory, instead of a Gibson, I would rather you target a Montas.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a young guy.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if I'm in the Cardinals position now, the last thing I'm worried about is just consistency and predictability. I want upside. And Kyle Gibson is very reliable, but he's not an upside guy based on age and stuff. Where a Montas type, he signed already, so it's irrelevant. But I mean, a Montas type who throws 97 with a splitter, and he's 30 years old, 31 years old, I would rather take a chance on stuff, guys, than just reliability.
All right. So we have come to the conclusion that Kevin Wheeler believes the Atlanta Braves are a model for the Cardinals. They just don't line up player by player.
Well, what's the way to put this? They're your aspiration. That's who you want to be.
Your aspiration. I like that.
Yeah.
Aspire.
To do the things the Braves have done in building their team.
which brings us, yeah, that's a great way. The aspiration is a key part of meritocracy and a good way to take down a dynasty. Aspire to be it.
Tear it down, baby.
We solved it. What a way to start December. Kevin, thank you very much. That, of course, is Kevin Wheeler. You know his voice from Camel X, 1120 AM, from DGS, the drive time show there.
The Gas House Gang.
Yeah, I'm going to get to it.
Don't forget those guys.
I'm conflicted. But the Gas House Gang there with your good buddies, Tom Ackerman, Matt Pauly, and former BPIB co-host Bernie Miklas.
Yeah.
The Gas House Gang, which you guys do on YouTube and at Camo X on social media too, right?
Yeah, it's like a live show at noon.
Okay.
On YouTube. All of our shows, and it goes on the air at night on a lot of nights if we don't have a Billikens game or whatever. Yeah. All of our radio programming gets podcasted, so it gets podcasted. But really, it's more about it being a live show at noon every day.
Which member of the Gas House Gang are you?
Who did we decide? Because this was Augie Nash had a picture of the Gas House Gang, and we were tweeting about it back and forth. And I forget who I said I was. Mm-hmm. There's a Stumpy guy. Who was in the photo? Who is it?
Stumpy guy.
Jeez. It's that's what I am. I'm a Stumpy guy. It's one of the big stars from the Gas House
Pepper
Gang.
Martin?
It might be Pepper Martin. I might be Pepper Martin in that group.
Who's Leo DeRocha part of it?
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember the picture. Who was in that picture? Yeah.
All right. No, either way, I'm just over here doing my own podcast.
So. Dude, you have the best podcast in baseball.
Brought to you by Closets by Design. You can find it.
It is the best podcast of baseball, in my opinion.
Thanks. Thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you as always. You can find him and the Gas House Gang and all the stuff he does at Camel Wax. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcast. It's brought to you through stltoday.com and the Post Dispatch. That's also where you can find all the constant Cardinals coverage. My colleague and I, Lynn Worthy, we'll be off to Dallas to cover the winter meeting, so look for a bunch of stuff there, podcasts, chats, and, of course, articles and news and all types of stuff. As the Cardinals go there to trade.
Let's talk trade. Get some action.
They go there to talk trade. They're looking to trade. Let's do it. We'll see if they get any takers, and we'll see as the dominoes start to fall where teams go shopping in St. Louis this holiday season. Kevin, thank you very much.
You're the best.
Thanks, man. That's a great way to start December.
You're the best.
Thanks, man. All right. Well, for Kevin Wheeler of Camel Wax, 1120 AM, I'm St. Louis Post Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon. Talk to you from Dallas.
That was awesome.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.